Welcome to Buddha's birthday, Sesshin. Holy Week, Sesshin. A week for becoming whole. A week for being born as Buddha. A week for ascension into the vast unknown. A week for closely examining decorated eggs, decorated with all our conceptual ideas, enclosing our Buddha mind, chick. A week of pecking on the inside of the decorated egg. A week of receiving the pecks on the outside of the decorated egg from all the Buddhas. As we just chanted, although our past evil, harmful, distorted karma, all our accumulated confusion has greatly accumulated from beginning this greed, hate, and delusion. Being the cause and condition of obstacles in practicing and realizing the Buddha way. May all the Buddhas free us from these karmic effects. I mean, we've accumulated all these karmic effects, so how can the Buddhas free us from them? It's our own mind's karmic effects. But what if these Buddhas are not outside our own mind? These Buddhas that will free us from karmic effects. What if the Buddhas are those who are the freedom from causes and effects of twisted karma? The Buddha that's completely free from all these karmic obstacles is right here with us, as us, dancing along with all our karmic obstacles. And that Buddha, that free Buddha nature of mind, is what can free us, human creatures, from these karmic effects. I don't think that we can do it. We can't free ourselves from karmic effects. But Buddha can free us from these karmic causes and effects that are the obstacle in to practicing and realizing the Buddha way. Sesshin, as you have probably heard, means to gather the mind, collect the mind, embrace and sustain the mind. And we've been studying for the last couple of months the teachings of mind only. That everything we experience is aspects of mind, projections of mind, mind stuff. That we think is not mind. Stuff out there, colors and sounds and smells and tastes and touchables and conceptual ideas and thoughts and images and visions that we often believe to be something apart from mind, something other than mind. And we've been exploring, and I hope we'll continue to explore how these things that appear out there external to mind are not really external to mind. And we can do this through seshin, gathering or collecting the mind. So these bits and pieces of stuff like colors and sounds and tastes and so on that we've kind of exiled from our mind. We've externalized them. We've said, these are not me. These colors out there are not this mind. We've exiled them. So can we this week collect them back? Gather all these stray colors and sounds that we've exiled from mind. Collect them back where they belong as mind. We can look around and see an apparently external world. We can hear an apparently external world. And we can think of an apparently external world. So can we, this week, notice that all those things seem to be external to mind, and carefully, creatively, and diligently, slowly, start reeling them in. The sounds across the street, we think that are across the street, can we reel them back in to mind? The mind has no location, but it might help to envision the image that mind is like right here. It's not anywhere else. So if we think that those sounds are somewhere else, can we reel them back in to right here? Can we collect them and gather those stray bits and pieces of mind that we've kind of pushed outward, not very naturally, without any effort, we've pushed out across the street. We've pushed those sounds across the street. Can we see how they're not actually across the street? That would be one way of thinking of gathering the mind, collecting the mind, collecting all these aspects of mind that we, without closely looking, we think and feel as if they're not mind. Gathering all the objects back into the mind from which they came, right here. We've been studying the Lankavatara Sutra, and one of the last passages was an encouragement from the Bhagavan, the Buddha, saying to Mahamati, great intelligence, Bodhisattva, if Bodhisattvas wish to understand the realm of projection in which what grasps and what is grasped are nothing but perceptions of their own minds, they should avoid socializing and sleep, extra sleep, and cultivate the discipline of mindfulness during the three periods of the night. So, with the Buddha's encouragement, we're setting up a situation to do that. A mind-gathering retreat, a sesshin, to temporarily avoid social intercourse, socializing, which of course there's nothing wrong with. It's beautiful, essential part of life. This might even be considered socializing right now, a social gathering. But temporarily for these 5 days to spend most of our days in silence, just settling into this mind. Socializing is interacting with our own mind in the projected forms of other beings. But it's very hard to keep that in mind when we're interacting with them. So while talking or while listening to a so-called other, it's very challenging to not think of and relate to them as an other. So just to help us out in this project of gathering all others into the mind, all projections of otherness into mind, we just do this temporary skillful thing of just avoiding usual kinds of social activities and sleep. The Buddha doesn't say why here, but maybe it's just the spirit of energetic wakefulness. I think in order to see how the mind is working like this and projecting like this, it takes a lot of concentrated attention. So maybe we could hear this as just avoiding kind of sleepiness, dullness. Of course we need to sleep, but we're minimizing our lazy dullness in sesshin and cultivating the discipline of mindfulness during the night. We have long hours of sitting that start at night and end at night, and we cultivate the discipline of mindfulness, just paying attention to whatever's happening. Mindfulness only. So we create this kind of somewhat arbitrary and conventional setup called sesshin. We're all co-creating it with mind, which is how we create everything. And we have these wonderful instructions from ancient times that mind gatherers through many centuries and many countries have discovered various, just, you know, conventional things that seem helpful, like avoiding lots of usual socializing and dull mind, ways to practice the discipline of mindfulness. Mind is never anywhere else, but it's so hard to recognize that, that it helps to create these things. But let's, as we're doing it, let's see how, let's study how we're actually creating this sesshin. We're creating this mind gathering with our minds collectively. We're collectively creating it. We each have our own unique experience of sesshin, but we share many elements. That's the whole idea, doing this group mind gathering. So it's individual minds being gathered, and it's one mind being gathered. So some of you have heard many stories, mind-projected stories about mind only in the last couple months. From this Lankavatara Sutra. So here's a chance now to, based on those teachings, to hear how the Zen ancestors creatively expressed mind only and encouraged us to practice and realize mind only. And if any of these teachings seem abstract or you wonder how to apply them, let's just say for today, on the first day of sesshin, to start noticing how disturbance arises in us meaning in our minds, due to what appears to be externalities, external objects. See if throughout the day today, during zazen or during oryoki meals or during work period or during kinhin or during this talk, if disturbance arises, and usually we have some sense of what disturbance is. We notice disturbance arising in various forms. Notice, instead of getting completely caught up in the content of the disturbance and trying to figure out what to do about it or whatever, let's just, for today, try to notice. This is my intention for today as well. To really notice that when, as disturbance arises, notice how it seems to be based on externalities. It seems to be caused by something outside the mind. Something other than mind only. Something other than just mind. Maybe it seems obvious. Yeah, maybe we think, of course, disturbances are caused by things outside the mind. But let's really get the feel for that. Let's really study how, not so much what exactly the disturbances are, or how we should get back at those people who are disturbing us, or something like that, but that they seem to be that the people or the ideas or the colors and sounds or tastes seem to be out there. Now you might think, well, ideas, we know ideas are just mine and they're not out there. But notice how the ideas that are disturbing are about things that are out there, aren't they? That's one of the most amazing things we can do as people. We're sitting here in Zazen. There's a person that we were talking with yesterday, and we're being totally disturbed by that. And obviously the person's not even in the room. We're not seeing or hearing or tasting or touching them, but they're disturbing us. Of course it's our mind, but see how the disturbance seems to be caused by the idea of them that seems to be not just the mind. This is the basic practice of Buddha Dharma that could be spoken of in many forms. So our Zen ancestor in China, Huang Bo, said, all Buddhas and all sentient beings are nothing but one mind. Or only this one mind. So in Chinese, the way of saying citta matra, mind only, is yui xin, only mind. Kind of reverse that. It's the way of translating mind only, yui xin. So all Buddhas and all sentient beings are only yui, this one mind, or yui zei ich xin. So not just only mind, but he adds in a little specificity to mind only, or only mind, only this one mind. We could just say only mind, but the Zen ancestors were into specificity, actually. They are into this one event right here and now, as opposed to kind of like the abstract concept of one mind, I mean of only mind. So only this one mind right here now. All Buddhas and all sentient beings are only this one mind, besides which nothing exists. Oh, there it is. We could even add in all Buddhas and all sentient beings and everything else that we're experiencing is nothing but this one mind, besides which nothing exists. Or other than that, other than this one mind, no thing exists apart from mind, outside of mind. If great disturbance arises and you start noticing that it does seem to be based on externalities, if you can just remember this one phrase of great ancestor Huang Bo, all Buddhas, all sentient beings, and everything is nothing but this one mind, besides which, or outside of which, no thing exists. this mind, which is without beginning, is unborn and unceasing. It's not any color, it has no form or appearance or characteristics. It does not belong to the categories of things which exist or do not exist. This mind doesn't really exist. We say there's only this one mind. Well, so that's all that truly exists? No, it doesn't exist either. But it also is not part of those things which don't exist. It doesn't fall into these categories of existence and non-existence. Nor can it be thought of in terms of new or old. It's not long or short, big or small, for it transcends all limits, measures, names, traces, and comparisons. Sounds like we might think, whoa, this is getting really abstract. But it is that which you see before you. Not abstract at all. Here it is. And interesting there too, it's not that which you see in your inner heart or something like that. It's that which you see before you. This is only this one mind. It's that which you see before you. But unfortunately, he says, begin to reason about it and you would once fall into error. Oh well. But how could this be? This one mind. Let's figure it out. It's like the boundless void, vast emptiness, which cannot be fathomed or measured. The one mind alone is Buddha, and there is no distinction between Buddha and sentient beings, except, sorry about this, I mean really ultimately there's no distinction between Buddhas and sentient beings, but you know, conventionally speaking, we could say that sentient beings are those that are attached to forms or characteristics, and they seek externally for Buddha. So the one mind, this one mind only, is Buddha, and there is no distinction between Buddha and sentient beings. So this one mind is sentient beings, too. No distinction between Buddhas and sentient beings, except that sentient beings grasp characteristics or objects and therefore seek externally for Buddhahood. That's the only difference. Buddhas don't seek externally for Buddhahood. It'd be kind of silly, right? It'd be like, why would a Buddha look somewhere else for a Buddha? But sentient beings think that we might find Buddha outside ourselves. So going back to, may the Buddhas in their great compassion free us from karmic effects. If we think that the Buddhas are somewhere out there that will free us from karmic effects, allowing us to practice the way without hindrance, that's kind of like seeking externally for Buddhahood. But what if this great compassionate Buddha that is free from cause and effect, we could even say is the actual freedom from cause and effect, is not external, can't be sought out there. but this very Buddha that is the freedom from cause and effect is not separate from sentient beings. It's just that from the point of view of the sentient being, the sentient being seems to be separate because they seek for the Buddha other than themselves or outside themselves. By their very seeking, they lose it. For that is using Buddha to seek for Buddha, and using mind to grasp mind. Even though they do their utmost for a full eon, they will not be able to attain it, Buddha. They do not know that if they put an end, if they cease conceptual thought and let go of their anxiety, the Buddha will appear before them. Do you think the Buddha will appear before them as a 16-foot tall golden body? Or will the Buddha appear before them like the floor, walls, ceilings, other mind gatherers, and whatever appears before them becomes Buddha? Sentient beings don't know that if they just cease conceptual thought and let go of anxiety, forget their anxiety, the Buddha will appear before them. For this mind is Buddha, and Buddha is all sentient beings. It's not the less for being manifested in ordinary beings, nor is it greater for being manifested in the Buddhas. This sacred gathering.
Practice of death. Could that be also described as a practice of finding evidence of
it? Gathering the mind is citta matra, my only mind. This gathering is not seeking, when I say we're reeling back in the apparently external colors and sounds, that's not like seeking to pull. What we're usually doing actually is seeking the external colors and sounds, either seeking them or avoiding them. Like, want those people across the street shut up so I can concentrate? That's kind of like a little kind of anti-seeking. But reeling in those sounds to be like, actually the sounds aren't out, if they're not out there, they can't really disturb this zazen.
Find them
in this one mind. Find them here, where they've always been. Seeking and finding. So seeking for sounds and colors externally, or seeking for a Buddha externally, is seeking and externality go together. You can't seek something that you already are. That's absurd. But as soon as there's externality, there's either seeking or aversion. That whole dynamic, that whole relationship with externality settles down into right here and now, where we just find, we can't help but find colors and sounds right here, not out there, and Buddha right here.
So when we find that we're disturbed, We can see that's a Dharma gate for alleviating suffering.
Yeah. Seeing the disturbance is the, you could say, the reminder to look and see and find that's not about something out there, and then we can continue to explore, like, can disturbance be maintained if we really don't see that it's out there. This sesshin is great for this kind of thing because it's like, you know, the physical disturbance, that's a big one, right? I'm not thinking about these colors and sounds anymore, but this body is disturbing, and this body's not something out there, is it? But I would propose that all disturbance, it comes from a projection of externality, actually. So I think this body, if it's disturbing us, it seems to be outside the mind. I think that seems to be the problem. Thing is, it's so much closer than the sounds across the street. It kind of seems like it's almost not outside. But I would propose that's the problem. That our knees seem to be outside the mind. Doesn't it? This is something to explore and great opportunity. Because knee pain will be offered this week. What's that? Because knee pain will be offered this week. Freely to everyone, as much as you'd like. The Buddhas are offering us. Yes, they offer us various forms of discomfort and disturbance. Only for our study. The Buddhas offer it. Yes. Way-seeking mind, the mind that seeks the way. Often we start seeking the way as something out there, and as the way-seeking mind gets more and more refined, that we come to see that the way is not out there to be sought. So the culmination of what started maybe as way-seeking mind becomes way-finding mind. The way is not somewhere else. But it usually does start as a kind of external seeking.
Well, I can't help but think that when we fall into or dive into practice, that it's all these forms and things. And yet, when we're sitting zazen, that's different. All of a sudden, it's not everything out there. It's all right here. And so, I'm just starting to look at it differently.
Yeah, so maybe we could say sesshin is about integrating those two, what seem like two different types of practice, like where we sit, and symbolically facing the wall is like not paying attention to all the stuff that's over here in the center of the room or anywhere else. It's like, and then we turn around, so sesshin is constantly this movement from facing that way, and then facing in this way, and then facing that way, and then bowing that way. So it's like, as we keep turning different directions, to integrate them by seeing that they're not really different. Yeah, those are all different aspects of the same thing. But by doing a lot of wall contemplation, as they call it, Bodhidharma's meditation, where the objects become more and more simple. There's very few colors on the wall. Then naturally they start to get reeled in just by the very setup of sesshin. less talking, less looking around, less this getting caught up in externalities during zazen. Then when we turn around, can we treat like oryoki and meals and services and things in this way? Can we start to see how oryoki is a great one, because it's rare to be able to have such a concentrated form of eating, and that's one of these five or six objects that we, you know, during zazen we don't get to play with the taste so much, taste and smell, but during meals it can really like still very hard to pay attention, but we have this chance to like, let's see how not only is the mind creating this dance of serving and being served and so on, but the very tastes and smells of apparently external food things are actually emanations of mind too. They're not, the food's not external to mind. Therefore, if we get something that we don't like or that we really like, it's not as disturbing. I think that's part of the design of this whole thing. It's a sensory show, sashin. You could say pretty pared down compared to like a Grateful Dead concert. But same idea. It's still the six senses are totally active, and we leave them totally open. We leave the, everything's coming in, and we're experiencing all of it, and fully receiving it. Outside the mind.
It's like when you bring up disturbances, sitting here, sitting in the zone, and it's not yet outside or whatever. Very rarely am I ever really disturbed by anything. A lot of times I don't really even notice it. But if for some reason I am, that thought will come.
We could also ask who is disturbed. So as the Lankavatara Sutra said, if bodhisattvas wish to understand this realm of projection, in which what grasps and what is grasped are nothing but perceptions of their mind, they should do sashin. What grasps is the projection of a self, and what is grasped is, mainly I've been talking about the what is grasped part of like the colors and sounds and stuff. But yeah, the grasper and the grasped, which don't really exist as separate things, but as soon as there's grasped colors, actually then there's the grasper of them. You can't have one without the other. So therefore, in truly not grasping externalities, which means, you know, in the end means not making externalities, not making things external, at that time then there's no grasp, there's no self that's grasping either, yeah. They dependently co-arise. And what dependently co-arises? The appearance of a self or a grasper, and the appearance of colors and sounds and thoughts that are grasped. They dependently co-arise, because real things don't dependently co-arise. If they did, real things means things that don't come and go. substantial, permanent things don't arise. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.